For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson. Friday once again, and it's time for the Friday News Feedbag with Discovery News reporters Jorge Ribas and James Williams.
How you doing, Will?
Jill.
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm good.
What'd you say, James?
Jill.
What's that?
That's like a greeting, like hello, but really meaning it.
It's okay. Greek.
All right, well, that sets the stage for this feedback. It's good to have you here. As always, here's how the game works, or the show, or the podcast works. We have three stories from each of you. You tell us a little bit about each one, and our guest judge is here. We'll introduce him in just a minute. He will choose the story of the week, and as I always explain, it's really based on nothing other than what the guest judge likes or doesn't like. And in fact, I think the story that the guest judge chooses reveals a lot about his or her personality. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Matt Strokia is here.
Yes,
Matt,
I am here.
Thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about what yourself, or just tell us what you do here at Discovery.
What do I do here at Discovery? I'm in the new media division, which is essentially, I guess, I don't know, best way to describe it, like the behind-the-scenes sort of thing you'd get on a DVD, besides the movie. Discovery Channel's got the shows, whatever. We're doing all the extra stuff.
Oh, so. Like the Easter eggs.
Yes, exactly. So we'll do all the behind-the-scenes type stuff, but we'll also shoot original stuff, but more on a small scale.
All right, well, that's great, Matt. Thanks thanks for telling us about that, and let's just jump right into it, if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
All right, we'll jump into the feedback. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
James Williams.
So my first story, it was published in the July 1st issue of the OSA's Optic Letters, and there's a researcher in Australia that's figured out a one-step test that uses holograms to diagnose astigmatic errors in the human eye. And they do this by showing the patient a hologram consisting of a sunburst pattern, and then that patient reports which sunburst line appears the clearest. And this would replace those big googly goggles that they put on you, and you have to look against the wall and see which one is most clear. But honestly, the thing that I think is most interesting is the fact that someday they might be able to make a Princess Leia hologram from Star Wars, and that would give you better vision, maybe. So, that's not in a study, but I'm just hoping they do that.
That's why you like the story.
Yeah.
You could just be talking to someone and they're a hologram. They're not even there the whole time you were talking with them.
Yeah, and then your vision gets better.
All right, that's a curious story. Let's go over to Jorge Ribas for his first story of the week.
Okay, I got a story out of Germany. Where in the journal Computational Biology, scientists have developed a robot that can walk up slopes and mountains, I guess, later on. And what they did was they took a robot that's called Runbot. For obvious reasons, it can run very fast. It has the world record in speed for dynamic machines. And they installed an infrared eye on it that they can detect a slope in its path and adjust its gait on the spot. So it actually learns. So the video that they had on the connected with the study was showed that the robot was walking up a slope, and it was kind of like a treadmill that goes up and down, and as the treadmill got higher, the robot actually fell backwards. And then when they did it again, same test, the robot learned to adjust its gait to that position, and it shortened its steps, and it leaned forward just like a person would. And you see these tiny little robot legs walking up the slope of the mountain or whatever they're simulating there.
Does it have little robot shoes?
They were like kind of like I guess they look like little socks, I think. But you know, they're learning, so just watch out.
So an application could be like maybe even rescue robots, possibly.
Yeah, that's something that that they mentioned, was that for people that get stuck up mountains or wherever, sending teams of robots, I guess, to save the humans.
If you were sitting on a mountainside and a robot walked up to you in little robot booties, I'd be horrified. I'd be like, they won. While I was on this cliff, they won.
Right. And also, I would kind of think I was definitely low on oxygen and hallucinating, but that would just be me.
All right, Matt, what do you think? Would you be willing to be rescued by a team of robots?
I'm all for it.
Okay. All right, let's take it back over to James Williams for his second story of the week.
All right, my second story comes from geodesists at the University of Bonn, who have remeasured the size of the Earth, and unfortunately, everybody, it's a couple millimeters smaller than we assumed. Yeah, but it's just a couple millimeters, and what's interesting is the way they measure it. They have these radio telescopes that are worldwide, and they measure the radio waves from quasars, and they can tell, I guess, the time it takes to reach the different radio telescopes, gives them these measurements that are precise within a couple millimeters, and by doing this, they can tell things like the fact that Europe and North America are distancing each other from each other at a rate of 18 millimeters a year, And the main reason that this information will come in handy is because they can also track how much the sea levels are rising. So as the climate change, they can, you know, they can get a really accurate account of where that stands.
If we're distancing ourselves from Europe, are we getting closer to Asia?
We must.
Have we figured out how much it weighs?
They don't include any of that in this study.
All right, let's continue. Jorge, back over to you.
Okay, this one is a study from a graduate student at Duke University, and what she did was she played two versions of a sparrow song, and one was recorded in 1979 and one was recorded in 2003, and it was a male song. And what she found was that the female sparrows, they're called female white-crowned sparrows, preferred the newer version of the same song. And so this is the same bird call. One was just recorded two decades ago. And the theory is that what she's inferring is that the songs change over time. So they're not exactly the same as they were sung in 1979. And I think that's funny. What I did was I looked up our top songs from 1979, and on the top 10, we have YMCA and Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive, and my favorite, Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart. So, I think birds have more in common with us because, you know, I mean, if you rolled around in your car playing Do You Think I'm Sexy...
I disagree.
You think you would still get...
I think you go to any karaoke bar and I Will Survive is still good.
Dude, that makes total sense, though, when you think about it. Because if you're, like, how many different noises do birds make? They're all pretty much the same kind of annoying, high, shrill thing. And
to us, right?
Yeah, I mean,
but I just assume that birds are annoyed by themselves. If I was a bird, I would completely change my tune because I'd get sick of it.
Right. Yeah, it's like the hottest summer jam now isn't going to be cool two decades from now, you know?
Now, real quick here, The bird song, was it, I mean, they say that it's the same bird song that they're giving to the females, but is it sounding the same? Or, I mean, is the pitch a little different?
That's what they said, is that they found that the one that was played now, the pitch has changed. It actually has gotten a lower pitch than the one was being played in 1979. But that's the way that the birds sang it back then,
is
what I got from the article.
Did you hear them? Did they have samples of them?
They didn't. They didn't on the website.
So when you say they sung the same song as before,
it was the same. The same sort of, you know, the fluctuations of the song and the flutter of the notes or whatever.
Matt really wants to wrap his mind around this one,
and I'm at a loss.
I want to hear the song. I mean,
should. You know, maybe what I could do is try to get a cut of it.
We can play it on next week's
feedback. And we can figure out if.
Do you know? Have you heard it? I mean, you can hum it if you know it.
No, I don't. I didn't hear it. But I could find it, and then I could sing it, or we could play it, and we could see someone likes the 1979 version or the more recent.
I have an idea. We can get the old version and the new version of that, and then we can get Gloria Gaynor's version of I Will Survive and compare that with Cake's version of I Will Survive.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, that was like around that was around 2000 probably.
I think the science is flawed there, but I think one thing Matt is finding out is that the reporters on the feedback don't always have all of the answers.
We don't, but we try.
Yeah.
But mostly we just make stuff up.
All right, let's take it back over to James for his third and final story for the week.
Right, so speaking of fairy tales, in Chemistry and Industry, which is a magazine of the Society of Chemical Industry, they think they have found that compounds found in pumpkins could potentially replace or at least dramatically reduce the amount of daily insulin injections that a lot of diabetics have to endure. And they say that the pumpkin extract is potentially very good for people who are pre-diabetic as well as those who already have diabetes. And I think that's cool, like when they find stuff that's in like normal food or things that you would eat in a pie that has these incredible health benefits that were always there and you just find them.
Well, I'm assuming because you're saying this would reduce the fact of them taking actual needle. I mean, would they just eat it?
No, they would pull the compounds out of it, the molecules that are, you know, that help them, and then I would assume they would give it to you in some other form other than like giving you a big hunk of pumpkin.
But you'd still get a shot.
Right, they would still have to get a shot, but they wouldn't have to take as much insulin. And I think, you know, especially in a case like that where you're putting that substance into your body, the less that you have to do it synthetically or the better.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, the pumpkin.
Shot of pumpkin.
Yeah. not just good at one time of the year anymore.
Right.
All right.
I mean, for pumpkin growers.
This is huge.
It's huge.
You know, honestly, like two Halloween, but forever. There's like, it says here, there's 230 million people with diabetes. That's 6% of the world's adult population.
It's astonishing, yeah.
So that, I mean, that's, you know, at the moment they're just doing this stuff using rats, but they, you know, they, I think eventually they move on to humans with that stuff. So,
all right, Jorge, what's your third and final story?
My third and final story is a report from the National Research Council, which finds that the way we're searching for life on other planets is flawed, because we're looking for life as we find it here on Earth. That is, you know, creatures that are, you know, have a carbon-based metabolism, a molecular system capable of evolution, and we have to start kind of broadening that to what is called weird life, which is things that have an alternative biochemistry. So, for example, you know, we don't look for life that could live in liquid like ammonia or formaldehyde, because you can't do that here on Earth. But that doesn't mean that on other planets there aren't creatures that can. And one of the things that they wrote in the report was that while it would be tragic if we found nothing, no life anywhere, it would be even more tragic if we came across life and we didn't even know it was, because we weren't looking for that type of thing. So that includes just, you know, broadening the what we perceive as life, and things that could be, you know, actually just different DNA compounds that we don't have here on Earth. And the question is really just how do you broaden something that you can't even really define, I guess, is what I'm
that's like
about.
That's like, yeah, like think of a new color.
Yeah. I mean, it's really so complicated.
Just did it.
You know, it might just be, I don't know, we might not even be able to see it with our own eyes, I guess.
All right. Very high concept there, or interesting concept. Have to wrap our minds around
that.
So many questions, so little time, especially here on the Friday News Feedback, where all of us are busy, and I know you guys are, so let's head into the judging round. Thanks for the stories, guys. Great as always. Matt? Are you prepared? In fact, before we do this, let me review for our listeners and for you as well, for your benefit. And we'll remind everybody that at this point, James has had a two-peat, as I believe he called it last week.
Yep.
He's coming back, but Jorge's stories have been chosen 6 times over James' 4 stories. So,
yeah.
Okay. Pretty close call right now. But don't let that, that should, you know, you don't even know these guys, do you? So, the stories this week, James Williams told us about holograms making for better vision tests. Second story, or one of his stories, was also the Earth is smaller than assumed. And finally, pumpkins possibly helping diabetics. So we'll keep an eye on that story. These 3 stories from Jorge included a robot that can climb mountains, a robot mountaineer, if you will. We also heard about the Sparrow song sounding better now than it did back in 1979, at least to sparrows. And finally, his last story had to do with life elsewhere in the solar system and how we may or may not realize that weird life exists. So, Matt, it's now your turn. Some interesting stories this week.
Absolutely. I hate to judge. Like, I'm debating between.
Well, you are the judge. So
I know.
Okay.
But I'm debating.
I hate to judge.
You have to.
Your job.
I'm debating between 2 stories right now.
All right.
But they're under the same reporter.
Ah, interesting. Well, that's okay.
Okay.
So you're struggling. So,
wow.
Somebody
someone's just like third on the list.
Is there, yeah. So this week, yeah, we'll have a big loser. All right. go ahead.
Should I just say who the
reporter is? Tell us the 2 stories, and then you've got to make a final decision somehow.
Okay. I think it goes
maybe to we can help you.
I think it goes to Jorge this week. Because I'm debating between the Sparrow one and the, what was the other one?
He had 2 other ones.
I think
the Sparrow one. The solar system or the walking robot?
Yes, that was what it was.
Well, it seems to me if you can't remember a story, you should choose the one you can. So do you want to go for the Sparrow one, or do you now remember the robot one and you really like it?
No, I think you're right. I think I'm going to have to go with the Sparrow one.
Now the hard part, Matt. Why?
Why the Sparrow one? Just from someone noticing something in the 70s and going straight to now and just relating it to exactly what the reporters were talking about. Just how, you know, music changes. People's likes, people's dislikes, they change over time. And just the fact that, not saying a bird is insignificant, but the fact that a bird can know and develop itself to change, you know, just to change with times, I'm trying to get at. But it's just, It's amazing to see that, especially in nature.
It's thought-provoking, and yeah. Although it doesn't explain why golden oldies do well.
That's true.
I wonder, do they have different phases? Like, what did the birds have kind of like the grunge era, and then maybe their punk rock movement was like, you know...
Well, I mean...
To contrast the disco movement for them, I don't know.
I think we're assuming too much. I mean, this is based off one study where she's comparing two individual tracks. I mean...
I like how Matt's keeping us on track.
He's keeping us grounded.
It could be very well that one bird, you know, didn't really have any luck doing the old song and just wanted to start something new. Or, you know, I mean, there could be birds out there that are doing the older song still. And so
that's true. I wonder if there's like a trial and error thing where they're like, all right, I'm not getting any birds doing this song, so let me just tweak the high F here.
Yeah, I mean.
And, you know, it makes sense that if you're singing the same, if a population is singing the same song day in and day out, they're going to want to maybe improve on it a little bit.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the one thing I hope is that the researchers do not listen to the Friday News feedback, at least for that particular study, because I'm sure we've missed the point entirely somehow. But, Jorge...
I don't think she would be too happy.
No. But if she is listening, please send us an email, pod_cast@discovery.com, and set us straight. And also for all of our podcast subscribers and listeners, please feel free to email us anything you want about a story, maybe a story we missed, you'd like to hear us cover, or if you'd like to be a guest judge, we're doing that too. So you can email us, pod_cast@discovery.com.
Can I say something real quick,
yes,
Jorge?
Yes, please.
Congratulations, Jorge.
Thanks.
Yeah, so Jorge up 7 to James's 4 now.
Sorry, James.
Oh, no, that's right. This is where he had good stories.
All right, Matt, thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you, Matt. Yeah.
Thanks, Matt.
James, Jorge, have another great week, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Thanks, Will. Same to you.
All right, for the Friday News Feedback, I'm Will Johnson.